How can a 13-year-old girl end up missing at midnight from the comfort and security of her own bed? Who could have lured her into this false sense of security? Why would the family not hear or know anything that went on in their house that night? Savannah Grace Copeland, fondly known as Van by her family, was born on September 3, 2011, in Knoxville, Tennessee, alongside her twin brother, Casey. She also has an older brother, Britton, and her incredibly active, loving, and supportive parents, Michael and Amanda. One of the most notable aspects of Savannah's life was her unique relationship with her father. Out of everyone in the family, Savannah and her father shared an especially close bond. In many ways, Savannah was like a carbon copy of her dad, particularly in terms of personality. Her father describes himself as being somewhat introverted, and Savannah shared this trait. She was naturally shy, enjoyed her independence, and didn't mind spending time alone. The two of them could spend hours together without saying a word, simply enjoying each other's company. This quiet understanding highlighted the special connection they shared. Of course, they had many meaningful conversations too, but the ability to communicate through silence spoke volumes about their relationship. Savannah had a range of interests that brought her joy, including music, art, and scary movies. However, the one passion that stood out above all else, besides her love for family and friends, was tumbling. Like many young girls, Savannah began gymnastics at an early age. It quickly became evident that tumbling was her favorite part of the sport. By the time she reached Powell Middle School, she had the opportunity to join the cheerleading team, which felt like a natural fit for her. To support her passion, Savannah's parents arranged private tumbling lessons for her, and she dedicated herself to improving her skills. Cheerleading became the activity that truly helped Savannah come out of her shell. There's nothing quite like watching someone thrive in an environment where they feel completely in their element. And for Savannah, that was cheerleading. It brought out her true spirit, breaking through her shyness and allowing her vibrant personality to shine. Her cheer coaches often remarked on her contagious energy and enthusiasm. They fondly recalled how she would skip, yes, skip, circles around her teammates during practice, exuding joy and excitement. Despite being naturally reserved and introverted, Savannah transformed into that cheerleading environment. She loved every moment, from leading the cheers to carrying the big megaphone during games. Her shyness melted away, and she fully embraced the spotlight, much to the delight of the crowd. Savannah's family was deeply involved in supporting her cheerleading endeavors. They attended all her events, cheering her on with pride. Her dad even brought oversized cutouts of her face to hold up during games, a testament to their wholehearted support. For Savannah, cheerleading wasn't just a sport. It was a way for her to express herself, find confidence, and create cherished memories with her family and friends.
Her spunky personality was the icing on the cake for our squad.
The Powell Mac cheerleading coaches say Savannah Copeland was quiet until you gave her the megaphone.
The girls were like, oh no, I don't want that. And she was like, give it to me.
She yes. loved to tumble, never missed a practice, and soon took on the role of a leader.
She just had an aura, a presence about her that was a genuine and loving presence.
But yeah, she just loved being out there with everyone and doing the things that cheerleaders do.
And the Copelands were constants at Powell Middle games to cheer on their girl, Van, as they called her.
This big head on a stick, her face, and we would hold it up and yell at her. And I mean, everyone in the stands would hear us and see it and laugh.
It wasn't just cheerleading and tumbling that Savannah excelled in. She also thrived in other sports, like karate, and was known for being an excellent student in school. Her dream was to one day attend the University of Tennessee and study forensic anthropology. For a 13-year-old to already have such a specific and ambitious career aspiration was remarkable. Forensic anthropology, for those unfamiliar, involves studying human remains to help solve criminal cases. Savannah's interest in this field reflected her desire to help others and make a meaningful impact. Losing her before she had the chance to pursue her dreams feels profoundly unfair. This brings us to the tragic events of October 22, 2024. That morning began like any other for Savannah's father, Michael. He woke up early, as he always did, and left for work before the rest of the family woke up. However, shortly after arriving at work, he received a call from Savannah's mother, Amanda. She was alarmed to discover that Savannah was not in her bed when she went to wake the children. Panicked, Amanda immediately called Michael, who turned around and rushed home. This was completely out of character for Savannah, who was an incredibly well-behaved teenager. Any parent would be terrified in such a situation. Savannah's parents quickly turned to the Life 360 app, a popular tool that allows families to share real-time locations. The app not only shows a person's current location, but also provides a digital trail of where they've been. It even indicates if someone is riding in a car, whether the car is moving or not. It's an invaluable resource for parents, and luckily, Savannah's phone had the app installed. When they checked it, the app showed that Savannah was nearby. Acting on this information, her parents searched the areas indicated by the app. Unfortunately, Savannah's phone had died, making it impossible to call or text her. Her parents followed the path shown on Life 360, knocked on neighbors' doors, and asked them to check any security footage they might have. Despite their efforts, they couldn't locate her. The app indicated that she had gone missing sometime between midnight and 2:30 a.m., but without her phone's signal, they couldn't pinpoint her exact location. Later that afternoon, the sound of sirens shattered their hopes. Savannah's remains were discovered on a dirt trail behind a community pool near Powell High School. A passerby walking along the path found her. Tragically, it was clear from her injuries that she had been stabbed. Authorities determined that a pocket knife had been used to take her life. Sadly, there was nothing anyone could do to save her by the time she was found. The circumstances surrounding her death remain heartbreaking and deeply unjust.
The morning after Powell Middle's first basketball game of the season, Michael was on his way to work. A call from his wife brought silence. Savannah was missing. The family used an app to trace her digital tracks up until her phone died. They scoured the area before Knox County deputies launched a search.
Her Life 360, which is an app that
yes.
you can get,
yes.
made it look like she was walking there.
12 hours later, a detective knocked on the Copeland's door. Savannah's body was discovered along a trail.
It's a surreal feeling that, you know, for a moment you don't feel like it's real. And you just expect to wake up from.
This was a nightmare they couldn't wake up from. Their beautiful 13-year-old daughter, whom they had just been cheering for in the stands of a basketball game the night before, was gone. Tragically, it turned out that the person responsible for her death was someone they knew. 15-year-old Malakia Lamar Harris was arrested and charged with second-degree murder.
At around 4:45 this afternoon, through dispatch, we received a call on a possible deceased body on a trail over in Broadacre Subdivision. Our officers responded to that, did find a body. And tonight, just around 9 p.m., detectives identified a person of interest and arrested a 15-year-old male and is being charged with second-degree murder in the death of a 13-year-old young lady.
At this point in time, there is very little information available about Malakia or the circumstances that led to Savannah's murder. However, according to Michael, Malakia was not only someone they were familiar with, but also someone they had welcomed into their home. He was someone they had sympathy for, someone they even cared about. The extent of that care has not been widely reported yet. At the time of the murder, Malakia was living with his grandfather and siblings. Savannah's family may have tried to step up and support him, possibly because he wasn't receiving enough care at home or was dealing with emotional struggles, family issues, or similar challenges. Regardless of the reasons, none of that changes the fact that he was someone they knew, someone they cared about, and now someone responsible for the murder of their child. Understandably, this has left the family with a complex and conflicting mix of emotions.
Within hours, detectives named a suspect, 15-year-old Malachi Harris. He was a friend of Savannah's and her family.
There's a lot of conflicting emotions. The natural one to move toward is anger and rage toward him. But this is someone we cared about.
Do you have any indication why?
No. Something made him angry. And He's not at an age where they really understand fully consequences.
Following Malachia's arrest, he was taken to the Richard L. Bean Juvenile Detention Center. Since he is only 15 years old and legally a minor, the case began in juvenile court. However, it may not remain there. At a hearing on November 13th, prosecutors stated their intention to try Malachia as an adult, an action that the Copeland family supports. That said, transitioning the case to adult court is not a simple process. It involves a lengthy legal procedure. Prosecutors have expressed their willingness to pursue this, but several steps must first be completed. A judge will need to review the evidence against Malachia, evaluate his mental health, and ultimately determine what is in society's best interest. These decisions require careful consideration and cannot happen overnight.
Knox County prosecutors want to try a teenage murder suspect as an adult. They announced their plans this morning in court. 15-year-old Malachi Harris is charged with killing 13-year-old Savannah Copeland. A reminder, the details of this case are graphic. And joining us now to break down the state's request is 10 News anchor Shay Smith. And Shay, you were in court this morning.
Yeah, Brittany, that's right. It was another status hearing for Harris, and police say Harris killed Savannah Copeland in October with a pocket knife on a trail near Powell High School. Right now, he is in juvenile court because of his age. However, today the state announced it wants to move this case to adult court. The judge says there are several legal steps he'll have to go through before the teen can be transferred. The first one, the state has to prove there is probable cause that Harris committed the crime. It's basically like a mini trial. The state will bring the key evidence they have against Harris. The second step, checking his mental health status. He'll likely go through psych evaluations, which could take weeks or up to months. Now, the third, the judge must determine by law if it's in society's best interest to keep him in juvenile court or transfer him to adult.
The decision to attempt to try Malachia as an adult is something the Copeland family fully supports. If this 15-year-old boy is truly guilty of what he is accused of, stabbing a 13-year-old girl with a pocket knife and leaving her to die, then he should face adult-like consequences. This is a complex and controversial topic that people feel differently about. Ultimately, the purpose of the juvenile system is to provide hope for rehabilitation. There are cases where young people get into trouble, commit serious offenses, but are later able to turn their lives around and become productive members of society. However, there are also cases where offenders continue down a path of serious crime and remain a danger to society. Each case must be evaluated individually, and the consequences should match the severity of the crime committed. One concern with Malachia's case remaining in juvenile court is that he would likely be released in just a few years. On the other hand, if the case is elevated to an adult court, he could face a sentence of 15 to 25 years for second-degree murder, which would be served primarily in an adult detention center. It's important to note that when adolescents are tried in adult court, they don't necessarily go straight to an adult prison if found guilty. In most cases, they begin their sentence in juvenile detention and are transferred to an adult facility when they turn 18. Although most cases that start with juvenile court tend to remain there, given the violent and severe nature of this case, it is reasonable to believe that Malachia could be tried as an adult. However, his defense attorney is expected to fight this decision. In November, the defense filed a request for discovery, requiring the prosecution to hand over the evidence they have against him. The prosecution was given a deadline of January 14th, which was also scheduled to be the date of the next hearing to discuss trying Malachia as an adult. Prosecutors had previously mentioned that they were unsure if the forensic testing would be completed by January, so it's possible the results were delayed, causing the hearing to be postponed. The defense has suggested that determining whether Malachia should be tried as an adult could take 6 to 8 months. Whether this is a genuine timeline or a stalling tactic is unclear. As of now, police have not revealed the communication between Savannah and Malachia that led to their meeting, which is something the Copeland family desperately wants to understand. Authorities have also not shared a possible motive for the crime. Since this case involves two minors, much of the information must be kept private. When the case first made headlines, neither Savannah's nor Malachia's names were released to the public. Eventually, their names were disclosed, but authorities have yet to release any photos of Malachia. There is one short video showing him walking in handcuffs, but his face is not visible. It's uncertain when, or if, his identity will be fully revealed. The Copeland family remains emotionally devastated, confused, and angry. If any of us were in their position, we would likely feel the same way. Yet, through their faith and the unwavering support of their community, Michael and his family have been able to find light in this darkness. The way Michael speaks about it is truly moving and inspirational.
When you're in a dark place, sometimes it's difficult to see anything until you realize that there is still a light there, and it actually looks brighter because you're in a dark place. But the reality is that that light has always been there. I'm a religious person, so I'm going to say that that light comes from God, but it is seen through the community, through the relationships and the people that we are surrounded by.
In a different interview, Michael opened up about feeling some anger towards Savannah in a way. He feels angry that she left that night and struggles to understand why. He has access to all of Savannah's Life 360 data, which shows that sneaking out was something she had never done before. This leaves him confused as to why she chose that specific night to leave and how she may have been potentially lured out of her home. To be clear, he is by no means blaming her, no one is. She was only 13 years old. His feelings of anger stem from confusion and the difficulty of comprehending why she made that decision on that night. It's shocking because this behavior was so unlike her. There might be information that hasn't been revealed yet. Information that could show Savannah was manipulated or coerced into leaving her home.
Anger is okay. It's a natural emotion. We need to be angry, and I am very angry. I don't show it, but I am angry at a number of people.
Can you tell me who?
I'm angry at Savannah. Why did she go out that night? She's never gone out, as far as I know. You know, I mean, I could look at her Life 360 every single day and I could see she didn't sneak out. She never went out. We never had to worry about that. She was generally speaking, terrified to go out. Going out at 12 o'clock at night, not the best thing in the world, generally speaking. So she knew these things. And so it was an absolute shock to us that she would have gone out. So I'm mad at her. I'm angry at this kid who did that. It was a betrayal of trust. I'm angry at this kid's family that I have opinions about now. But I think the discipline in our faith is that we recognize that that road that I just went down, talking about my anger, can so easily turn into hatred and rage.
Faith has always been a cornerstone for this family. Something they've consistently relied on and leaned into. It's truly beautiful that, in times like these, faith provides guidance and comfort, helping people make sense of the unimaginable. The power of faith, along with being part of an organized religion and a church community, can bring immense support and healing to families in need. For the Copeland family, their faith and the support they've received, not only from their church, but also from their entire community, have been extraordinary. Many efforts have been made to honor Savannah and support her family. One of the most touching tributes came from her cheer team. The team has gone above and beyond, showing remarkable care and maturity despite their young ages, to honor Savannah in meaningful ways. Perhaps the most significant tribute occurred about 2 weeks after Savannah's passing, during a cheer competition that the team had been practicing for, Savannah included. Savannah had always loved being the one to hold the megaphone as part of their routine, and that role had been planned for her during this performance. After her loss, none of her teammates felt it was right for anyone else to take her place. That role had always been hers. In a truly thoughtful and heartfelt gesture, the team decided to play a recording of Savannah's voice at the start of the routine. This way, it felt as though she was still part of the performance, even in her absence. For a group of teenagers already facing the immense loss of a friend and teammate, their decision to honor Savannah in such a beautiful way speaks volumes about their love and care for her. Their actions are a testament to the incredible bond they shared and their determination to keep her memory alive.
Coach Courtney Groom says the weight of the tragedy has changed her team of middle schoolers.
They were a lot stronger than I thought, but it was hard seeing how hurt they all were.
Terry Shalander is not only a coach, but a mom.
We love them like we love our own kids. So It was devastating for us, and then to have to go tell my daughter that she's now missing a teammate and a friend.
With an ongoing criminal investigation into Savannah's death, Cheer became a safe space for the girls to talk about their teammate and their friend.
Parents volunteered their homes, and we could go and let the girls sit together and just be together. They could cry, they could tell stories and laugh.
After devastation, the world keeps spinning, and 2 weeks after Savannah's death, Palmac Cheer Team had to compete. The team honored Savannah in their clothes.
Went out and bought blue Def Leppard t-shirts. She loved music and hair bands, and her dad loves Def Leppard.
But the girls also knew they wanted to leave space for her on the mat.
They immediately, we don't want somebody to take her place. Nobody else wants to do the megaphone. Can we do a recording? Does anybody have it on video?
After some searching, they found the audio.
So she was still able to keep her place and her position in the program, and it all started out with her yelling out loud, "It's touchdown time!"
Through her love of cheer and the love for her teammates, Savannah's voice will always live on.
Another beautiful way that Savannah's cheer team has honored her is by hosting a donation drive to raise money for their local animal shelter. Savannah absolutely loved animals and was described as someone who cherished all living creatures, even something as small as a spider. This donation drive was a touching way for them to give back in her memory. In addition to the donation drive, they created an award in Savannah's name that will be given each year to someone on the cheer team. The award is meant to honor the team members who most embody Savannah's character, which they described as spunky and eager. The support for the Copeland family hasn't just come from her cheer team. Not long after Savannah's passing, her family attended a basketball game to support the cheerleaders. As her dad said, "Once a cheer dad, always a cheer dad." While they were at the game, the opposing team's cheer squad brought the family flowers. It was an incredibly thoughtful gesture, showing how deeply young people can connect with their emotions and care for others in such meaningful ways. The church has also been vocal in its support for the Copeland family. In fact, the pastor's husband built a beautiful cross for Savannah, which now stands along the trail where her life was tragically taken. The cross is painted blue because blue was Savannah's favorite color. Over time, this spot has transformed into a memorial where people leave flowers, candy, and other items that remind them of Savannah. The sentiment surrounding this memorial has been deeply moving. Memorial sites often carry a somber and dark atmosphere, which is entirely understandable. However, Michael, Savannah's father, has spoken about how he wants this space to be seen as something beautiful. While it is undeniably the site where a 13-year-old innocent child was murdered, Michael has chosen not to view it as a place of tragedy, but instead as a space of beauty and remembrance. In December, Michael, along with a handful of others, transformed the trail into a space that anyone can enjoy, whether they knew Savannah or not. Initially, the memorial consisted only of the cross, but now it has become a place of reflection and peace, a testament to Savannah's memory and the love that surrounds her family.
Community support that's given this grieving family hope.
And it helps to kind of restore my faith in God and in everyone around us.
And while it's easy to imagine this path in memorial brings back memories of tragedy,
right now it's, you know, there's not a lot of joy or genuine happiness.
Copeland and this family are finding a way to change the narrative on what this place means. Instead of grieving here, they want people to see it as a reminder of who Savannah was, hoping it sends a message to others to take time to be kind to each other instead of focusing on the bad.
I'm not going to allow my heart to be filled with that kind of rage. It's going to be filled with compassion. That's the only way I know how to defeat evil.
To Michael Copeland, this is the sound of devotion. He and some friends are transforming the site where his 13-year-old daughter, Savannah, was found stabbed to death.
The idea of your child being found in the dirt and it's still just being in the woods and in the dirt is not the kind of thing I want to come sit down at when I come to this area.
Copeland plans to spend a lot of time in this space. He says Savannah would have enjoyed it too.
She liked to sit alone. She's kind of introverted like I am. So she was comfortable sitting by herself and just being in her own world.
The area will be a patio space with benches and Savannah's cross. While it will always remind him of his daughter, he wants the space to be for everyone.
I don't want it to be just a place to remember my child. I want it to be a little bit more meaningful for anyone, even if it's people who have lost somebody or people who just want to come and be silent for a little while.
To the landscapers who came out to help Saturday, Copeland says it warms his heart to have their support. For them, it's just their way of giving back to a family they care about.
We love your husband. We see him every day.
And we can't imagine what you're dealing with.
So with each laying of flagstone, an area of tragedy gets one step closer to being a space for community.
Getting justice for Savannah is, understandably, everyone's biggest focus right now. However, another major goal for her family and community is to ensure that Savannah is never forgotten. The Copeland family's community is wholeheartedly committed to making sure that this at least is accomplished. They are determined that Savannah's memory will live on.
Lights outside, almost every house in the Powell community are blue. It's a tribute to a 13-year-old girl. Volunteers with a local business walked around to deliver those lights this morning. It's a way to honor the life of Savannah Copeland.
We care about our community and the people in it, and we just want to show our support to the Copeland family.
The power of community has been wonderfully overwhelming and has really made me grateful for everything that we have here.
Their whole family has expressed profound gratitude for the support they've received. If there's anything positive to come from this tragedy, it's the strength and unity of their community. That's truly been the overarching message. Even in the face of this horrible, unimaginable loss, there has been light. Michael has reflected on how, as difficult as it is, embracing all the different emotions is what makes us human. There isn't just one way to feel. For the Copeland family and their community, there are a million emotions happening all at once, and they're navigating them together. When Michael was asked if he would ever be able to forgive Malakia for what he had done, he shared that he already has. Not because Malakia deserves forgiveness, but because Michael refuses to let Malakia's actions control who he is.
Do you think you will ever forgive this person?
Yeah, I do. Forgiveness is a wonderful word. When these kinds of things happen, we talk about forgiving. It's not necessarily, it's not at all because that person deserves it. It is almost entirely because we are done letting that person's crimes control who we are.
Michael has also expressed that, at some point, he wants to sit down face to face with his daughter's killer and ask him why. Why Savannah? This desire comes especially after all the things the family has done for him. While the specifics of those actions and the extent of the relationship remain unclear, it seems that they were genuinely supportive of him. We want to hear your thoughts on this case. Do you think he should be tried as an adult? Please take a moment to fill the comment section with love and support for the family. If they read this, it will mean so much to them. Until next time, stay safe and take care of yourself and those around you.